Change doesn't wait. Sometimes it storms in, sometimes it creeps quietly, unfolding in ways we notice later. It stirs in boardrooms, classrooms, streets, and communities, wherever people act with purpose. What moves you? A vision? A challenge? A belief in business as a force for good? And what holds you back? External factors or limiting beliefs? I'm Gary Watts, and this is Moved, the podcast of 289 people inspiring change. I'll be speaking with people exploring what first moved them, what they've achieved, and the challenges they've had to overcome, both outside and within. Each episode is about human performance, leadership, sustainability, doing the work that matters, and the moments that change everything. This is Moved. I'm pleased to welcome Charlotte Harrington to the show. Charlotte is co-CEO of Belew Water, which is a social enterprise based in the UK, and their mission is to change the way that people see and consume water, and they have a commitment to invest 100% of their net profit in pursuit of that purpose. I first met Charlotte at a UN summit in the UK where she was a speaker. I got to know her more in terms of the move from retail corporate world to having three young children and moving to a more purpose-led business. It's a fascinating conversation and might change the way that you see water. I hope you enjoy. So Charlotte, really good to see you again.
Thanks, Gary. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So it would be great to start off with some of the things that we were discussing last time we spoke around your background. So I know you started in retail and then you were on maternity leave, and it was around that time that you reevaluated things. So I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about that thought process you went through.
Yeah, of course. I spent my formative years in retail, as you said, latterly as category director at Tesco, where I'd spent 10 years. And I was on maternity leave with my third child when I think I realised that the world, you know, back then wasn't the world that it is now, and flexible working wasn't available, and that I didn't want to be away consistently, under pressure, in a way not present. And I figured that I could do something else with my commercial skills. I just didn't know quite what. So I talked to friends and family about charity and decided that actually charity probably wasn't going to be the right fit for me. And then completely out of the blue, I got approached about a role at Belew. And at that time, I didn't know what social enterprise was. I didn't know that there was something between a business and a charity. And I was just intrigued. More than anything, I was really curious to see how does it work. And I think the opportunity to go from such a massive corporate into a really small business was also a really interesting challenge. And I never forget being interviewed and being told, you know, you make every decision with sort of one hand tied behind your back. Because what you want to do in a for-profit business is what you need to do. But actually, in a growing business where lots of startups tend to run at a loss because they're investing to grow, you don't have that luxury in a business such as Belew, because we can't run at a loss. Because if we run at a loss, we can't deliver against our purpose, which is primarily the reason people choose Belew. So it's a really, really interesting ongoing challenge that means that no day is ever the same. And I like that variety, which I think was probably ingrained in me through retail.
Yeah, amazing. There's so much that we'll get into more there, but really intrigued around the shift that you made. Did you go into maternity leave thinking about, you know, you wanted to reconfigure things, or was it during that it happened?
Yeah, no, it was my third child. So I got three children that were under four at the time, and wow. I knew that, you know, retail was not the place that was going to support me and let me have any sense of balance between, you know, being a mum and, you know, being an exec. So I had concluded that I probably wasn't going to find the right role. I did have the conversations with them, but it definitely wasn't the right time. I think if you had those conversations now, it would be received quite differently. But I think perhaps also I'd had enough, right? I'd done 15 years in retail. It is relentless. Yeah. I'd built up a really interesting skill set. But I wanted to do something that I could feel really proud about, that I could say to my kids, I have made the world a better place. Just in a small way, I'd done something that was meaningful beyond shareholder value. And that's, I guess, what I was looking for. And thankfully, it found me.
Yeah, so serendipity struck in a way.
Indeed.
Yes, purpose-fueled work.
Yes.
So when did that start to become something, you know, that you thought of more like purpose?
I don't think I knew it at the time. So I don't think 10 years ago that's what was, you know, it wasn't a word that people used in the way that it is used now. But there was just something inside me sort of saying, if you're going to be away from the kids and you're not going to be present, you need to do something that actually means something in the world. So, you know, there'd been a lot of pressure from what shareholders needed and, you know, what was the right thing for the shareholders when really the customer should have been the first kind of and most important stakeholder. And that sort of jarred with my personal values. And so I knew there was a disconnect between the expectations of that sort of big business and what I valued and how I wanted to operate. And I think that was the sort of first signal, perhaps, that things in their current guise weren't where I wanted to spend my energy.
Yeah.
And then I guess it evolved into being, I can do something meaningful in this world that uses the skills I've built up, but that looks quite different to what I'm doing currently. And I think that was that sort of mindset shift. And I suppose the freedom of having time to think, right? You know, as much as having three kids is relentless, there are moments in the middle of the night where you're up and, you know, you have very different thinking time. And I think that's where it sort of started to seed itself and become something that I thought, no, this is something I need to pursue. There's something that's going to give me energy here that I want to do going forward.
Yeah, yeah, amazing. That's really, really good to hear. So tell us all about Belu Water then.
Yeah, so Belu is a drinks brand, primarily in mineral water. Well known if you live in London and you like eating out and about. Our primary customers are hospitality. And we've been around for over 20 years. The business was founded on the belief that through doing business, you could help solve some of the world's problems. So we happen to be in water, but in theory, this business model could be applied to any product category or service, because it's what happens with that profit that really makes a difference. So we stand by the kind of original founding principles of Reed Padgett, who founded the business, who was, you know, ahead of his time in his thinking. But the business has sort of, I guess, evolved over those 20 years into the business that kind of is here now. So, you know, we operate primarily in the UK, but we do have a business in Hong Kong and Singapore. Our business is focused on bottled mineral water, as you can probably see behind me, but we also have a filtration business, which enables hospitality outlets, but also corporate businesses to install filtration taps, so to remove their reliance on any kind of single-use packaging when it comes to water. So it's sort of, you know, one side of the business almost competing for the customers on the other side of the business, but that's what we like. We like to be at the sort of entrepreneurial, pioneering end of things, demonstrating that you can do things differently and that you can think about things differently. Always championing what's right for the environment. So sustainability was baked in from day one. We emerged into the market as a challenger brand, and I suppose we've still got that within us. We've also always been a campaigning brand. So originally the business campaigned against bottled water.
Right.
So why on earth do people need to be drinking this? We've got perfectly good tap water. And again, that sort of is still within our DNA. So we always think environment first. What's the right thing to do from an environmental perspective? And what's the content that we should be sharing that enables people to upskill themselves? So, for example, we brought to market, after many years of considering it, a range of cans. So we've got Still and Sparkling now in a can, which in itself is not innovation, but what we've done on the packaging is we've said, by choosing this can versus you know, a recycled plastic bottle, a refillable, a glass bottle. This is the carbon impact. So let's have a conversation around all packaging formats because there are pros and cons to all of them. So let's not pretend that this can is plastic free, for example. It has a plastic liner. So let's be honest, let's avoid greenwashing. And I think that's something that the brand holds very firmly to, because that's a piece of credibility that we believe is really important in the marketplace. So not jumping on the bandwagon and just trying to sell the latest hot thing. So I think that keeps it quite interesting, because you've always got to think about what's the right thing to do. And then we exist to deliver against the Sustainable Development Goals. So I think this is where you heard me at the UN conference. Yeah. And we have written three of those specifically into our company articles. So we exist to deliver against SDG 6, which is around water, 12 for responsible consumption, and 13 for climate action. So they are embedded into everything that we now do. We are owned by the Blue Foundation, so a governance change that we've undertaken over the last 2 years, sort of modelling ourselves, I guess, on Patagonia. And it means that we can only ever exist to deliver against those, which I think is a really powerful business model. And we shop in a number of different ways, depending on, you know, what you want to talk about. But primarily, we've been known for our long-standing partnership with WaterAid. So to date, we've given them over £6.1 million, which clearly sits within the SDG 6 bucket of that, as it were. But for us, those are our sort of guiding principles. And our overarching purpose is to change the way the world sees water. So we can show up under that banner in a number of different ways.
Wow, there is so much there that I want to come back to. change the way the world sees water. So, I mean, it definitely did appear to be ahead of its time. So 20 years around 2006, that was before the UN SDGs were even, you know, released, of course, about 10 years before. But really intrigued just to, there's a number of threads to go back on, but what was seen around that time, 20 years ago, what was seen that actually, we want to create Belu and this is what it needs to look like? Because it did seem a little bit ahead of its time.
Yeah, and I mean, I can't speak for Reed because I you know, I don't know specifically, but he came from a campaigning background, and I think he could see that there wasn't a sort of premium water in the marketplace, and there wasn't a premium water necessarily in hospitality or serving hospitality, because primarily we are still B2B, and that there was a gap in the market to have a conversation around packaging. Now, at the time, it was plastic packaging. I mean, it still is now, to be fair. But all packaging, as I said, has its pros and cons. So, you know, I think we have to be honest about those choices. And depending on what metric you're using, you know, will determine what you may choose to do. So there isn't a sort of a golden product. The actual ultimate is you just use filtered or tap water. That's, you know, that's the best if you're looking at carbon footprint perspective or a recycling perspective. So, you know, it's starting that conversation. I think that's what he was looking to do, and bring to market a different style of product ultimately.
And changing the way the world sees water, was that right at the beginning, or when did that emerge out of interest?
No. So actually that was our re-emergence from COVID, post-COVID as it were. Yeah. So in March 2020, the outgoing CEO was obviously leaving. Nat Campbell joined us, and we, in those kind of first 6 months, 6 to 12 months, I guess, of COVID, we took some time to reevaluate what the purpose of Belu would be in the world that might evolve from where we were. And that was one of the pieces of work that we did, was a broadening of our purpose so that we could show up in the world in different ways. And that's where the governance work then came, and the SDGs got built in and that sort of thing.
Yeah. And I love it. It's such a powerful line, changing the way the world sees water. When I, you know, that immediately works on many levels to me. And you know, you mentioned the alignment with clean water SDG and climate SDG and responsible consumption and production. But when that phrase, changing the world sees water, what does it mean to you?
So I think it means lots of things, as you sort of said. I think it's everything from people valuing it. So, you know, how many people think about how many touch points they have with water before they leave the house, and you don't even think about it in this country? Well, you think about it, depending on where you are. You know, if you're currently in, I think it's Sussex, isn't it, at the moment, that's been without water for, you know, best part of a week, right? they are now really aware of how valuable water is and how important it is. So, you know, I think it's the value of water, it's the importance of water, it's a finite natural resource. So given everything else that's happening from a climate perspective, we need to be preserving that. We need to be respectful of it. And we're not. And that conversation is starting to happen, but we need to elevate that. And then I think at the other end of the spectrum, you look at the communities, the marginalized communities that water aid work with across the world. And if they don't have access to clean water, sanitation and hygiene, they live, they have no chance to get themselves out of extreme poverty. The girls don't get a chance to get to school. They don't get an education. They thought they can't start businesses. The village can't prosper. It just has such a huge impact. And I think, you know, again, people just don't appreciate something as simple as water can transform lives. And in COVID, you know, the access to water to enable you to clean your hands was critical. So it's, you know, it's within everything that we do. Our bodies are made up. You know, there are so many things that we need to be grateful for. And water is the starting point of that, right? Without water, none of us can survive.
Yeah, it's in the category of air, isn't it, really? You know, we take these things for granted, breathing and water,
Yeah, but people just don't recognise it. So, you know, it's a way to have a conversation by putting it in a product, by by sharing it and enabling people to just make a different choice and make a more thoughtful choice and have that conversation with their guests or their employers or their their shareholders. And I think that's quite powerful, right? For a small business like Baloo to be able to start that conversation or be part of that conversation is really important.
Yeah. You say small. How big is Baloo out of interest?
So last year we were just under £11 million revenue.
Yeah, super. And how many people work there?
About 20 of us. Yeah. So it's small and perfectly formed. And we work with, I think the other interesting thing about Baloo for me coming from someone like, you know, Tesco, is that you can achieve a lot with a really small focused team if you have really smart partnerships. So we lean into, you know, very strong long-standing partnerships with our manufacturing partners, with the people that we buy our raw materials from a brand agency perspective, you know. So we don't have those people in-house because we don't need them, we're not big enough to need them, but we have a sort of roster of different people whose expertise we pull on, and I think that's how we keep the core team, as it were, fairly small. But to me it feels quite big, because when I joined we were a team of six.
Wow.
So actually, you know, it kind of, I joined and we were a £5 million business with a team of six, and we're now at, £11 million, sort of adding £1 million each year is sort of our current kind of growth trajectory that we've been on, and we're now at 20 people, but we're not looking to add more and more people.
Yeah, I love that. So you've seen it kind of go from six to 20 people, but you, it definitely appears that you punch above your weight, because, you know, 20 people, many would say that's quite a small team, but actually your voice on water seems, you know, I was at the UN conference that you you were a speaker at. You've mentioned about the WaterAid like partnership as well, so you definitely seem to be having a, you know, a good voice for the size, actually.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's been built over a number of years, and I think it's that sort of cumulative effect of the brand presence. I think that helps. You know, people sometimes go, oh, Baloo, I don't know that. The minute they see the bottle, they're like, oh, yes, I see you everywhere. So I think there is that sort of that recognition. Quite often, though, what you find is people say, oh, I didn't really know what you stood for. I just knew you were a good brand. And you say to them, have you read the back of the label of the on the bottle? No, I haven't actually. And then when they read it, they're like, oh, wow, you do all of that stuff. So, and I think that's fine. I don't think that, you know, if you're enjoying a meal, you don't need to be reading the back of the label and really understand. But I think certainly from people who choose Baloo, quite often it speaks volumes about Baloo on the table and then what else you've got on your plate, or what else they're choosing to serve, or how their team are engaging. So I think it talks volumes about them as a business as much as it does us. So we are really lucky, because we have some incredible customers that have been with us for many, many years, and lots that you know, might be new in the market and come straight to us, and you're the only people we're considering. So we are, you know, the brand and the brand strength and that credibility is really, really critical to us. So we don't take that for granted, which is also why we have to be really careful about what we do and how we say things and the choices that we make when it comes to NPD and innovation.
Yeah, Yeah. That's really interesting around people aren't necessarily reading the bottle always in certain contexts, but are aware that the brand is good. I wonder where that comes from. That somehow they're getting that feel.
I don't know, but maybe it's because they know that where they've chosen to eat, you know, they care about the provenance, or you know, there's a story that they've been they've heard from the person serving them, or there is, you know, it's there, but they definitely recognise it as a brand. I think if you're in the industry as well, and people have sort of moved around between restaurants and, you know, and maybe wholesalers, and actually they probably have a broader understanding, or like, oh yeah, that goes in this category. You know, we're not the mainstream. We are in this category of those that are trying to do something different, the challenger brands, as was, but now we are a bit more, I guess, mainstream from a kind of awareness perspective, certainly in hospitality.
Yeah, super. So the purpose, changing the way the world sees water, do you have a vision that kind of goes alongside that? I'm intrigued, like what you'd like to see, or how you're bringing that purpose to life.
So I guess the purpose is, you know, is the overarching vision. And I think what we've always said is that by 2030, we will change the way the world sees water, which means we've got a long way to go. But I think that's the same for all of the UN Sustainable Development Goals. So we are one part of it. But I think, you know, some of the things that we've been doing have been about starting that conversation within hospitality. So we launched a campaign last year called Served with Purpose. And that's a series of conversations with some of the incredible personalities, the change makers, the, you know, the real new kids on the block, to those that have been established for many years, having a conversation with them to understand actually what does served with purpose mean to them. So actually through us telling their story, having a conversation around water, broadening that reach. So that's one, I guess, example of how it's coming to life. But then we're also doing some really interesting work with people like Thames 21, looking at how do we invest in more nature-based solutions. So how do we make that part of our conversation? How do we get our customers engaged with that? How do we have a long-term partnership? Because historically we had, and this goes back to 2021, we moved away from buying carbon credits. We felt that, you know, we were a really small part of, you know, what we were buying through brokers. You never had the sense that what you were investing in was necessarily going to deliver what they were claiming, you know, it was going to deliver, despite the standard, despite the accreditation that it may have. And it just felt too distant. So we moved away from carbon offsetting and started investing in, you know, relatively small scale but nature-based solutions. So we're working with Thames 21. We're also working with RAP. So again, working with them around water. And we've signed up to the packaging pack with them. So there's a lot of work that we're doing there, I guess, from an influencing and advocacy perspective. And then I guess the third way is through our ongoing partnership with WaterAid. So we are one of their longest standing, if not their longest standing, partners. We are aligned with them behind the SDGs. So we signed an agreement until 2030 a few years ago. So we are very much aligned with where they are going. And they are talking at length around climate resilience for those communities where they operate, because they are the ones that are being hardest hit. So having a conversation that really helps to bring that to life, I think, is really important as well. So it does, our strategy sort of sits behind, you know, the SDG 6, 12 and 13. Everything we do needs to fall within that.
Yeah.
And the other framework that we use is one that we call our four P's. So the purpose is at the top. It then falls into our people. So, you know, the people that we work with, both the employees of the business, but also the partnerships and collaborations that we have beyond just the team. Then there's our product, because the product is not the kind of the first and most important thing. It's important, absolutely, but it's only important as long as it aligns behind the purpose and the people. And then the profit is the sort of the byproduct of that. So that finishes off that kind of four P's. And really that was our, I think when it came to fruition, that was our sort of our model for our systems change model, and how we would always come back to, does this make sense?
Yeah.
Ultimately, we have to make profit, and I think that's the real challenge for a growing, you know, business who's trying to invest to grow. Is there's a limit to how much we can invest in any given year to drive that growth forward. So some of the things that other brands might choose to do isn't a lever that we have, and that's fine. That we kind of make peace with, but it does always mean that you have to be really considered with those choices and the options that you have.
Yeah, there can sometimes be that tension, can't there, between your profit and, you know, running a business, a successful business that can exist and continue to serve the people and, yeah. and so on, but and also the impact that you're seeking to make. Could you touch on a little bit more around the Baloo Foundation? And you mentioned it's akin to Patagonia in a way.
Yeah, so the governance change really just put the Baloo Foundation above Baloo Water Limited. So ultimately, all our profit receiving shares were already gifted to the foundation, but we've just cemented that, I guess, in terms of going forward, that will be the ultimate decision making in terms of what happens to the profits that get passed to the foundation and how do they then get distributed. So the partnership with WaterAid is until 2030. We may extend it, but what else might the foundation want to do to deliver against the charitable objects? So just giving a cleaner differentiation between the Baloo Water Limited and then the Baloo Foundation. So the Baloo Foundation was always there, it just had a slightly different structure, so we've just tidied that up and made it really clear that that's the ultimate governing body of Baloo Water Limited.
Yeah, love it. And the UN SDGs, because you've touched on those a couple of times, and I'm just intrigued, like, when you first came across those and, you know, what they mean to you, because obviously you've been there on the stage and speaking about them, but personally, yeah, when you first made contact with those and what they mean for you.
So I think I mean, it was definitely when I was at Baloo, I remember WaterAid being active in getting SDG 6 onto the, you know, onto the platform and raising its profile. So I was sort of very much aware that that was happening. I think we didn't really embed them in the business until 2020. I think 2020 was the moment that we looked at them and said, actually, you know, we'd looked at lots of different frameworks and operating models, and we were trying to decide how do we move forward. And actually, it felt like the most balanced because it covered everything. And we obviously champion all of the goals, but as a small business, we need to focus ourselves on the ones where we felt that we could deliver some impact. So, you know, we've looked at adding, and we may still add SDG, I think it's 14, which is life underwater, because we clearly feel that with nature-based solutions, that would be an obvious one. So, you know, we'll continue to kind of evolve them. We may not write them all into our company articles, but they will form part of our kind of strategic plan. So I think 2020 was probably the moment that we reevaluated and thought, this feels like a, you know, a fair open source as well. You know, you can use them and they are there for you to understand and make the most of and consider where can you have some influence. So I think they're really powerful.
Yeah, definitely. And nature-based solutions. So do you have any kind of examples of those?
So the sorts of things that we've been investing is canal and river restoration. So, you know, I talked a little bit about the importance of water and how we value it or don't value it or should value it more. The importance of, you know, us leaving it in a safe I guess, for generations to come, it needs to be usable. And a lot of our rivers and canals aren't necessarily in the state that they need to be. So, you know, we are by no way the experts. And so we are working, as I said, with people like Rivers Trust to see what can we do to support the work that they do and make that part of our story and get others to then look at what we're doing, be inspired, hopefully, by what we're doing and think about how could they do something in a community that's close to them. Because there are rivers and canals that cover the UK, and lots of people don't even know they exist. Lots of people don't realize how close they are, and there's huge benefits to being around water, as you know, as lots of people will talk about. But you don't necessarily want to go into all of those rivers given the state they're in. So how do we help be part of that solution? So those are the sorts of things that we've been looking at alongside some work with Blue Marine on some incredible work they're doing down the south coast around seaweed and the benefits of kelp and that sort of thing. So so we've been dabbling a bit with different projects, trying to figure out actually where can we have the most impact and actually what do we think resonates going forward.
Yeah, so interesting. How has the way that you see water change, you know, back to when you were in the retail career, and you mentioned your three children, and then you kind of went into, you know, Baloo, but it sounds like maybe a kind of a new field for you in a way, it sounds like.
Completely. And
so how have there been any kind of things that aha moments, or I never really thought about that before, and what have been the way that you've seen it differently?
Oh, everything. I mean, I think I definitely fell into the category of not necessarily valuing it or recognizing how important it was. I think the pivotal moment for me was when I joined Blue. I think, I started to appreciate how complicated it was bringing products to market from the other side of the table. But also in my first month, I had the opportunity to go on an incredible trip to Malawi with WaterAid. And I think it was there that I saw firsthand the importance of the work that WaterAid do, the importance of the work that's happening across the communities, and the value that water brings to a community. So the most I think the moment that it really struck home was when they took us to a pre-intervention community in the middle of Malawi that was a day's walk. It was a hospital and it was a day's walk from most of the villages. So it was a long, long way and it happened to be a maternity hospital. And they had no water, no toilets. And they took us into the hospital and they showed us where, the rooms where women would be having children and where they'd be waiting whilst they were in labor. And because I'd only had a baby a year before, in stark contrast to the experience that I had and the incredible privilege that I had in an NHS hospital in the UK with clean water, with all the hygiene. You heard stories from the midwives of how they would work long shifts and they couldn't wash their hands between the women giving birth. They couldn't drink water themselves. They had nowhere to go to the toilet. And I just think it was that moment that you realized how lucky we are, certainly in the UK, and how if I could be a small part of WaterAid's work by funding some of these initiatives, then that would be a truly valuable use of my time that I could really help transform people's lives. And I think that for me was the moment that I came home and the kids were too young at that point for me to talk to them about it really. Age, 4, 3 and a baby, they weren't kind of aware of it, but now they are and I can see them making sure they turn the taps off. They really think about water and certainly you notice it when they talk to their friends. And so it clearly has become part of my narrative, just in a day-to-day life. But I think witnessing firsthand that impact was profound. It certainly changed my outlook, and my appreciation.
Yeah, it's incredible. We take these things for granted, don't we? But actually, even now, like you, in so many ways, we, have advanced society and so much progress in so many aspects. But actually, there are still many people that's such a basic thing that it's terrifying, the thought of a
Exactly.
maternity hospital, ward not having access to water.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the good thing, what I should say is that, they then shared, I don't know, 5 years later or two, 3 years later, maybe with me, the fact that actually they did go and then intervene. And that hospital now does have
That's
access
wonderful.
to running water and toilets, and they've educated all the people coming in and around hygiene and the importance of hygiene. So, they purposely showed us the pre-intervention, but we also saw some incredible places that had already been served by WaterAid coming in. And I think the work that WaterAid does is really important because it's not disaster relief. So they don't just parachute people in and say, "Here you go, here's a pump, there's the water, off we go." It's about them doing it through the community and doing it through partners in the community. So then it has a lasting impact on that community. So it's about the longevity of that, so that the communities are taught around, needing to have money put into a central pot so that if a part needs replacing, they have the money to replace the part. They need people who can then be the engineers in the community. So I think the work that WaterAid do is like a huge jigsaw puzzle, bringing it together so it can be sustainable beyond someone like WaterAid being present. And I think for me, that's a really important distinction, and really important for us as one of their partners to understand the work that they're doing in that space.
And for people like me, in the UK, this I'm just thinking about my morning. I've been up for a few hours. I drank some water. I brushed my teeth. I made a cup of tea, washed my hands, put water in the dog's bowl, things like that. And you're
Yep.
things that you've brought alive, really profound, but actually just on a day-to-day basis here in the UK, maybe for some of our listeners, are there any things you challenge or, you know, suggest to get, you know, because I'm probably relatively informed, but not fully, things that, you know, you might prompt to think about things differently in terms of water?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all really simple stuff. You know, it was stuff that we were taught as kids, probably, around, you know, turning the taps off when you're brushing your teeth, having a short shower. I think more now the conversation is around thinking around what you're putting down the drain. So actually, if you think about microplastics and you think about, you know, sponges and you think about clothing that goes through your washing machines, and certainly I'm not up to speed necessarily in all of that, but I do start to think about, you know, what chemicals do I use in the house, not just from a what's in the house and what might that be doing to us inhaling them, but also what does that mean if it hits the waterways? So thinking about that sort of impact all the way through the chain, I think, is the bit that I'm starting to be much more aware of, certainly in the work that we've been doing with Rivers Trust, seeing firsthand, you know, what happens when, you know, sewage ends up in the rivers, or, you know, there's runoff from the roads. And so actually starting to think about, actually, what can I do? What's my small part within that? So I think, you know, if people are starting to do those sorts of things cumulatively, we will all have an impact. But there is no easy solution. And I think that's the challenge. It needs systems change. And there are lots of different factors when you think about river health that need to be considered, from agriculture through to, you know, factories, through to homes, through to the road infrastructure. You know, there are so many things. It's a really complicated system to unpick. But the good news is that people are looking at it and thinking about it. And progress has been made. I think that's the other thing. There's lots of conversations around, you know, how bad everything is. And I think that's the other thing that WaterAid are good at, is highlighting the progress and the stories of progress. And the fact that innovation and tech is enabling some of this as well. It means that hopefully in years to come, it can go faster and at scale.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So like you say, so it's a finite resource. It literally is for most of us that are, you know, many of us that are lucky on tap, and but it's a finite resource and it's circular, you know, we have the water that we have in the world. So yeah, thinking about, you know, where you put it as well as, you know, your usage of it is really, really key. Most of us like to spend time near water, by the sea, by rivers and or lakes. And it was shocking for me when I found, because the Lake District is somewhere that we visit in the UK. And you would associate that with really, really pure, clean water, you know, by the mountains. But when finding out, actually, no, some of those are actually polluted and you may be recommended not to be in them. It can be shocking stuff, really. But like you say, there's lots and lots of positive news as well. And
There is. But it wasn't like that 20 years ago. So when, you know, when I was a kid, you could go in those lakes.
Yeah.
So it's changed. So it's what we've done to them. So it's us figuring a way out of it. And I think that's really important for the future generations, because we shouldn't be leaving it in the state that it is currently in. So I think we have to be the ones that find the solutions.
Yeah, definitely. Thinking ahead, because you've mentioned 2030 and progress and innovation, what are the things that you're most excited about or that you'd really like to see either in the UK or more widely?
Oh, goodness me. at the beginning of 2026, peace would be nice.
Well.
I think there needs to be progress. There needs to be more collaboration. And I think we need to be a bit more honest around where we are. So I think there's a lot of talk at events. And I think the challenge is, once you're in the space, it becomes a bit of an echo chamber. So everybody's talking the same language. We all understand what we're talking about when it comes to the UN Sustainable Development Goals. But I don't think that that's mainstream yet. And I don't think so. I don't think the majority of businesses are thinking about their impact on the world. So, you know, I would like to see some way of that becoming much more mainstream, of people, you know, there is absolutely things like ESG measures and CSR and policies, but that to me is being treated now as a tick box exercise. So it's lost the power that it once had. So I think there really needs to be some level of collaboration that moves beyond just talking about what would be good to do. into actual implementation and progress. So, you know, people having a clear path. But I just don't see who's taking that role or really going to make those bold investments in the way that we would need them to be made.
Yeah, maybe we could learn a lesson a little bit from like the original foundation of Belu 20 years ago, and you know, some of the founding principles behind that. Doing these things because you want to and you know it's right, as opposed to just because you have to, you know, like you say, tick a box.
Yeah, and a lot of new brands are doing that. But I think what's really hard is retrofitting it to a bigger business. I think that's when it becomes expensive. It takes time. It's about cultural change. You know, there are so many factors that I think people just find it too hard. And maybe now the focus is off. It's like you can get away without doing it, maybe. Whereas I think people who've, you know, are working in a business where it's founded on that belief come from a very different place. For us, it's baked into our DNA. So, you know, we have values in the business that we talk about now are our DNA. It's just the way we operate. So anyone joining the business needs to demonstrate these values, because it's really, really important to us that everyone is aligned as a baseline against those. Without those values and that core belief, this is not going to be the right business for somebody to work in, because that's what drives us. That's how we make all our decisions. That's the way in which we consider opportunities and we look at our risks. So I think, you know, there are people that are doing it and who get it. And there's a lot of talk about purpose now, but it's not yet at the scale that I think it needs to be at.
Has your leadership ethos changed this all over the years?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, I think with age comes wisdom. I think the way that I almost say the way I grew up in, you know, in my career was very corporate. And I've taken the best of that training, but used my own values and my own beliefs to guide how I now operate. So, you know, I think you do mellow as well with age. I think that's the other thing. You have a different perspective. You have learnt experience to draw on. So I think I have undoubtedly changed, but at heart, I'm still commercial, competitive, driven, but with a, you know, with a soft edge of, but I do this because actually there's something in it that changes other people's lives within the world, and that's the bit that really gets me out of bed every day.
Yeah, I love that, Charlotte. I love the work that you're doing. I love the work that you're doing at Belu. It was really good to see you at the UN summit. Obviously, when we spoke recently, I think before Christmas, it was really nice to meet for the first time, and then this conversation now. It's I really feel like I got to know you, and yeah, your kind of story from retail into Belu, and the things you've shared about Belu sound fantastic. If people wanted to learn more about Belu, where would they go?
We're on all the platforms you would expect. But Belu.org has our impact report and more information about the products and services we offer. So that's probably the best place to start.
Yeah. Yeah. And your Serve with Purpose campaign. I think there's a Serve with Purpose podcast, isn't there, as well?
There is a Serve with Purpose podcast. Yep. Available on Spotify, Apple, and wherever else you may choose to listen. So do have a listen to that, because we've got some great people who've featured, and actually more coming out this year. So it's proving to be a very exciting campaign.
Yeah. Yeah. Fabulous. You've prompted some good things for me. I think I'll look at, WaterAid a little bit more. Maybe, you know, someone from there might be on the podcast or something, but it's been,
that'd be great.
You're the first person that's been associated with water.
Okay, great.
On this conversation, so I really enjoyed that. And I guess the last question is, still or sparkling, what's your favorite?
Oh, I'm a still girl. Sparkling with still. A meal, maybe, but yeah. Still.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the time.
Sparkling for me.
Is it? Yeah. Most people do say sparkling, but no, I'm still. Yeah. However it comes, chilled, ambient, however.
Yeah, yeah. Fabulous. Charlotte, such a good conversation. Thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, Gary.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of Moved. If it sparks something for you, subscribe and share it with someone who's looking to make a difference. I'm Gary Watts, and I'll see you next time as we explore what moves people and ideas forward.